Happy Cinco de Mayo on the Fam Morning Show. It's Friday. It's about where the positivity stops.
It's a good day for tequila.
Yeah, you know
on
what?
On multiple fronts.
Lots of people need some tequila this morning or last night.
Yeah.
Yikes. It's fans of the Blue Jays, 5 in a row. Fans of the Maple Leafs, down 0-2 in the hole, headed to Florida. Vibes are low in the city of Toronto.
Think about where we were Saturday night.
What a fall
Blue
from
Jays
grace.
Red hot. Winning every game, right?
Yeah.
Every game. Like, they
They're
can't
unstoppable.
Lose. Winning in extras, you know, doesn't matter who's on the mound. Maple Leafs, 19 years, first series victory, celebrations, vibes very, very high. Celebratory tequila. Since then, since Saturday night, 0-2 for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and 0-5, I think,
five
for the Toronto
L's
Blue Jays.
In a row.
So 7 losses here for Toronto sports teams since Saturday night, and it is Friday. It's been a tough little ride.
And
here.
Haven't seen the sun in about 4.8 of those days.
I heard people freaking out because there was a glimpse of it yesterday. It was an awful day.
Yeah, but there was,
there was a moment. We're so desperate.
Yeah,
maybe I'm just not in the downtown
core. Holding on to anything,
core.
Justin.
Oh, my God.
Yuck. We'll take your calls at 7:30, folks. We can't wait. A tough one last night on all fronts, but at 7:30, we get to hear your voices. Maybe you can string together something good for us, but we'll give you the lines. We'll give you the numbers later on in the show. But 7:30, Leafs, we're supposed to be a feel-good Friday. It's going to be a freak out Friday, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a little freaky Friday situation here, but nonetheless, we know you'll be ready. We'll chat it out.
Yeah, I think some fire would be appropriate from the callers because, I don't know, I mean, depending on how you want to, there are going to be a lot of Leafs apologists today, too. There are going to be people that are really angry, and there are going to be people that will be like, oh, the deserve to win-o-meter.
Oh,
and
if
we keep going through that, like, yeah, they did play well, but they lost the game. They're down 0-2 to a team they're clearly better than. People should be frustrated. We should see some fire out of the text and phone lines because the situation calls for it.
We are far past the moral victories, deserve-o-meters, play well, still lose situation. This is the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. This is what you've waited years and years and years for. It's what your fan base has been on the edge of feeling for so long. And yeah, there are many positives to glean from last night's game. It doesn't really matter because you're down 0-2. And yeah, I really hope that they can maybe think about this a little differently when they head down to Florida and they have an extra day in between and can say, hey, we'll circle, like, there's 5 things that we're doing way better than the Florida Panthers. You know, Sergei Bobrovsky standing on his head, but X, Y, Z, look at the numbers, look at the deserve-o-meter. We played pretty well in that third period. We had a shift from hell in the second, and they won the game. But, man, the margin for error in the Stanley Cup playoffs is so thin, and we are far past feeling good about things that don't end up in results. Like, I was pretty positive after Tuesday night's game. I feel like I'm struggling to be as positive against the 0-2. Like, it's just, it's glaring. It's not a great spot to be in this morning.
No, it's not a great spot to be in. I don't think this series is over. I mean,
Well, no, because they could still win 4 games.
Of course.
It's still,
and there's still a maximum of 5 remaining. They can still win this series because they look like the better team, and maybe 1 can turn into 2 and 3 and 4 very, very quickly for this team. However, it's frustrating because, yeah, we've been talking about things being different, flipping the switch, what it takes to beat Tampa, all this stuff, and they accomplished that. They are a different team for a 6-game stretch, even if they were deserve-o-meter, if you want to do that. Maybe they weren't necessarily the better team, but they figured out how to win games in the postseason. They figured out how to be a different team. Things were supposed to be different. And now with this group against the Florida Panthers, it's like they've devolved back into that regular season team. Yeah, it looks good on the stat sheet. Yeah, the deserve-o-meter tilted in their direction. Yes, they probably, if played a million times, would win this game more often than not. But it is a departure from what worked in the first round. It is back to regular season Leafs, which again, looks great a lot of the time, but has not worked in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The ways they scored goals against Tampa, they've abandoned, right? And maybe that's just because what has been given to you, it's a little easier to get to Sergei Bobrovsky. Like, I'll get all that stuff, but more of it is on the defensive end where you're making the mistakes that you were so desperate not to make, mm-hmm. and didn't make versus Tampa, you are now making against Florida. And for every expected goal you gained, it doesn't cover up for the actual goal allowed when you made glaring, unforgivable mistakes. And they made glaring and unforgivable mistakes in this game, and they were never able to overcome the consequences of them.
And they're mistakes from the people that you pay the most money to be the core four of your team. And that is inexcusable. There's a lot of opportunities we can go through. The Maple Leafs could have won this game. They could have tied this game. They had it in the palm of their hand. Sergei Bobrovsky stood on his head. We'll get to that. And a lot of the missed opportunities were at the hands of the core four. Post, John Tavares had at least two or three golden ticket moments.
William Nylander was a rock star in the third period.
Exactly. After he was at fault for one of the goals. Mm-hmm. The Florida Panthers scored two pretty close in succession, and the game changed real rapidly. And I know it's one moment, it's one mistake, but that isn't Matthew Nyes, who just came from college, who has maybe a little bit of an excuse, but an understanding. That is Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, and William Nylander making just boneheaded decisions, mistakes.
And regular season decisions, mid-December decisions.
Right after that. It's stunning to me. These are the players that should be leading you. They should be the ones that you can rely on all ends of the ice. And you circle those two moments, and it's pretty hard not to put blame on the shoulders of those guys. And then with opportunities to capitalize, to tie it up or to take a lead, you know, they were buzzing. Yeah, I'll give them credit. That third period was pretty damn good to watch. There's a lot of opportunities. But at some point, I mean, you can get goal lead, but I don't know. Can you just find a way?
Like, it shambles in our brains.
Yeah. Seems easy for me to say, just put the puck in the net. But I mean, that's what it's kind of your job. You get paid millions and millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. You got to find a way.
Yeah. You want to start with, is there anything specific you want to start with? Like, should we do like the gone in 66 seconds lead in the start of the second period?
I mean, so just quickly.
You touched on the three, but I do think, sorry, go quickly.
I was just going to say quickly, first period. Like, it was a tale of three different kind of periods, right? First period, I felt really positive about. I was starting to write notes down. Okay, they got the first goal. Mm-hmm. Check mark. They got a power play goal. Check mark. They are controlling the play. The crowd was into it. They looked damn good in that first period. What happens when you go from one period to another when you go in the dressing room? Because it has been a mystery to me. Something changes with that momentum, with the team, what you're talking about, sometimes positively and sometimes negatively. They went in there. Some changed. It came out for the second period, completely different team. They looked like lackluster. They were doing things way out of character, fancy this, dipsy doodle that. I'm going to get a point. Like, it seemed like they just had flipped the script into, all right, we're already winning this game. Let's be loosey-goosey and look what happened. So first period, yeah, whatever. That's my summary of the first. Let's go to the second.
Let me stay on the first for a second because I thought they were obviously brilliant to start the game. Like, everybody was great. All four lines were fantastic. The power play was as good as we've seen it. Very, very aggressive. All things going into it were really, really awesome. It was perfect, though, until it wasn't. And at a certain point, I don't know when exactly it was. Was it before the goal? Was it right after the goal? For the Florida Panthers, it did change a little bit, mm-hmm. and it went from, oh, it's going to be really disappointing if they don't have a multi-goal lead at the break, to this could be 2-2 all of a sudden, and how much of a disaster would it be if it were 2-2? And Samsonov kind of hung in there. I mean, I think it was Ekblad who had that great chance, and Samsonov had an amazing save, and all of a sudden, it was like, all that you had done, it's like you almost gave it up, and you were lucky to be up one to end a period that you dominated. Yep. Dominated. Yes, Florida was probably pretty fortunate to not be down 3-0 before they scored, but getting two goals from a really, really great run of play for the first 12, 15 minutes, I mean, that's kind of what you would probably expect from a really, really dominant period. And then they just stopped playing. And I don't know if they got lulled into a false sense of security. I don't know if they thought, hey, this is the easy night. This is the opponent we were expecting. This is what we're supposed to feel like in this moment. But something did change. And then it just, like, rock bottom hit the floor to start the second period. Again, 66 seconds, brutal, brutal hockey, their worst stretch of the entire season, or at least the most consequential one. And it wasn't just William Nylander, Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews. Mm-hmm. Jake McCabe iced the puck 7 seconds in.
Yeah.
that forces William Nylander into, you know, he's trying to make a play. He gives it up. It's a really bad mistake, and it's the one we're going to remember. But the defense immediately sags. Ilya Samsonov gives up a horrendous goal to make it 2-2 at that point. And then Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner combine for one of the most egregious, you know, attempts at breaking out the puck in playoff Maple Leafs recent history. Like, I don't know what they were trying to do, but I don't know how you can possibly fathom making that decision in that moment. Both of them, like everyone on the ice too, was just, there was tons of flybys. There was four or five opportunities to sniff out what was happening, and everyone made a mistake over and over and over again. That was the slowest developing transition goal I've ever seen. Like, they had so many opportunities to make something happen and they couldn't do it. It was 60 seconds from hell, and the Leafs never ever recovered from it, despite everything that they had done before and after that.
You lose the crowd, you lose your momentum, the doubt creeps in. Uh-oh, here we go, we're down.
And they were brutal for the next 10 minutes.
And that is why you get veteran voices. That is why you've bolstered your lineup in a different way. I'm not putting it all on Ryan O'Reilly and whomever, but like anyone that's a leader on that team, you stop it right there. Like, you say, okay, like, down 3-2, this game is, there's still half a game left. We have been the better team. We can be the better team. We just did it in Tampa. We found a way to win games that we, you know, we were behind in. But the response was scared. It was, oh God, what's going to happen now? What if we go down 0-2? The crowd's quiet. The tension is high. And yeah, it took them a long time to find the pushback and the response. And the third period was great. Third period was awesome. Like, congrats, though.
That's the problem. You know? That's the problem with all the oh, they deserve better thing. It is easy to be great in the third period after you embarrass yourself.
You should be playing some desperate hockey.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's easier to look good when you're desperate because you are pushing, so you are taking more risk. The opposite team
is trying to be reserved, taking fewer
risks. Mm-hmm. They're staying behind the puck and trying to absorb everything. It is score effects. Right there, like that. It's not to like discount what they did, because they were, Nylander, we mentioned, I thought Tavares played as good as I've seen him play in a long time.
I needed
in the
it.
Third period. Mm-hmm. They were awesome. I get that. But it is easier to look and be awesome when a team is doing one thing and one thing only, which is just trying to prevent you from getting to the front of the net. Like, you can look great at 85% of the ice, but you're trying to get to Sergei Bobrovsky. And they did a bunch, but they did enough. Like, it was one team that was just sole focused on attack, the other sole focused on defense. And when you get that, yeah, you're going to get tilted numbers.
So a third period that they needed to play that way. So I give them credit for doing it, but I don't give them enough credit because they weren't able to find the way. And as you put it, they should have been playing that way. Sergei Bobrovsky, though, like, the guy has certainly unlocked something spooky, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after that first period and the first two goals, there was a moment there where he went to the bench and I was watching on the broadcast. He went and got some water and I thought, uh-oh, like...
Yeah, we were talking about that. We were like, what just happened there? Because I had my head down and I thought, are they thinking about pulling him? What was the deal? I thought it was strange too.
And I'm at home. I'm at home. I'm not in the building. So all of you that were picking on me, you can shove it because I didn't go and they lost. So that narrative stops now. Anyway, I'm at home watching on my TV.
Basically shut up is what you're saying.
Ben Ennis is the problem now. So I'm seeing the broadcast zoom in on him. And it kind of looked like, I mean, he obviously whatever he did, like take a little mental reset. But I thought, I think they're going to put Alex Lyon in, or like they're going to have a chat with him. Is he going to take a break? He's just been dialed. Like, he's lights out. It's an X factor I didn't consider. And you mentioned it before we did our keys to series, like what kind of X factor Bobrovsky can be, and it is definitely tiptoed into the scary X factor of Bobrovsky. Samsonov has been the lesser of both goalies in both games. Mm-hmm. In round one, he outshined Andrei Vasilevsky. I'm not saying that Ilya Samsonov's playing like crap, but he's getting, look down the ice, like Sergei Bobrovsky.
He's been outplayed in two games.
Vintage Sergei Bobrovsky. So if you're going to lose that battle, I mean, there's going to be a time where we're going to have to find a way to, and they did score on Bobrovsky early, but they need to change the way in which they're trying to score goals. And I think that is the way that they tried to solve Vasilevsky, and they did the Vazzy plan. They need to go back to that. Like, less fancy dancy this, put pucks on net, get traffic, and get an ugly goal. Right?
And they did get one ugly goal. Luke Shen made a great play to get a puck on net, and Alex Kerfoot banged it in to open the scoring. And that was kind of the start of what looked like a really shaky sequence for Sergei Bobrovsky. Like, he looked so vulnerable early in the game. It looked like, and I'm sure the Leafs felt this, like they were going to get six or seven on him if he stayed in the net. That's what it looked like.
It felt like a points
night. It did. He looked like he could not corral the puck, that he was, like Samsonov sometimes gets, like swimming a little bit. It just looked like he didn't have it dialed in. But he gets all the credit in the world because, unlike the Leafs, who could not center themselves after making those two mistakes or multitude of mistakes within 66 seconds to start the second period, he went to the bench, got that sip of water, and he was brilliant from that moment on. He was so good. And it's most representative when the puck is coming off the stick of Austin Matthews. Austin Matthews is trying everything. Austin Matthews is a Rocket Richard winner, maybe the best 5-on-5 goal scorer in the league, a guy who is considered the guy that took the torch from Alexander Ovechkin, and he's trying everything and nothing is working. He looks stumped. He looks like he is run out of ideas when trying to beat a goaltender, and we're only through two games in this series. And that's a credit to the, like, the, he's getting a lot of chances. His full arsenal has been unleashed, it seems, on Sergei Bobrovsky, and he's had an answer for all of it. It's scary how locked in this guy is, because ultimately, it could just come down to that. Again, this is Sergei Bobrovsky, though, and it's always fleeting. And he looks like he looked in the first 10 minutes a lot. Like, it's been a real struggle from him to keep his crease for even like a couple weeks at a time. So the hope is certainly that he can't maintain that standard. But right now, he looks like the most dominant force in the playoffs.
He's like the best goaltender left.
He's definitely the most decorated.
Because how are the Florida Panthers looking this morning? And the odds, Justin, has some shocking news.
We're using different books, clearly, but I just, like, checked it out. See, you know, Conn Smythe, Stanley Cup. Florida Panthers, on my book, were Stanley Cup favorites, plus 450.
Favorites. The Florida Panthers this morning, Friday, May 5th. Happy Cinco de Mayo, Florida Panthers fans.
It definitely depends on where you're looking, but that's some books quite the turn. Yeah.
The Maple Leafs are second to last in the book I'm looking at, ahead of the Seattle Kraken. It's a big hole to climb out of. All right, a couple of things that we need to bring up. So they do some different line combinations that last for a little while, but then Matthew Nyes is injured from the game. The Sam Bennett play has been circulating on Twitter in the moment. The broadcast caught like kind of the tail end of it, and then we saw some replays, and we've seen it all over Twitter, and it's a dirty play. Like, easy to say there. Didn't get penalized for it. People are thinking maybe he might get a fine for it, but, like, I mean, that's kind of retroactive, and who cares if he pays $5,000 for that? Matthew Nyes is injured, and the post-game prognosis wasn't favorable. Like, I haven't heard much, so it's not a good sign from Sheldon Keefe. It's just, it's tough to see, man. The kid has been playing so well, and that's going to be, it's crazy to say that he's going to be a hole on this lineup. He's a college kid. He's played less than 10 games. And he's going to be missed in that roster, knock on wood, that he has some time. This is maybe a positive between having about a week and a half before your next game. People can take some time to reset, but so can the Florida Panthers, who played a lot of hockey down the stretch, including Sergei Bobrovsky, who's played a net every night. So, I mean, I feel like it's kind of a wash. You get an extra day off, so do the Panthers. They can probably go home, reset, rehabilitate their bumps and bruises. A
couple nights in their own bed.
I mean, but Matthew Nyes, if he's not in the lineup for Sunday, it is pretty stunning how much it feels like it changes that roster.
So I'll start with Bennett. He had a real bloodthirst last night. Like, real...
But this isn't even talking about the Bunting play, too. We'll get to that.
Dangerous stuff, right? So he's... I mean, that... I don't even know what to call that. It's just like...
It's like WWE.
Yeah, it was definitely a WWE move. It's like grabbing at the neck and head and throwing.
You know what I mean? Slamming down.
Just slamming, yeah. It's... and again, it's not something you see all the time. But it's also not something you probably get suspended for, which is, you know, like, I just don't expect that because, A, you don't see it, but also it's not, like, something that's in the book where he's throwing a massive elbow at someone. It's kind of the stuff you see between whistles that just happened on the ice, and Matthew Nyes clearly wasn't expecting it. And I don't know if there's, like, an accumulation fine thing, but, like, his overall body of work and his disregard for human life in the game probably worth something, but I'm not convinced he will get anything. Maybe there's a $5,000 fine in there, as you mentioned, but really, who cares? That doesn't matter. Vinny Viola's horse probably going to win Kentucky
Vinny
Derby.
Viola.
Be like, oh, I'll pay that for you.
That's no problem.
That's no problem. So yeah, Sam Bennett's kind of getting away with whatever he wants out there. And I understand that he was penalized for the Michael Bunting thing, but it's like a different level of malice. Like, it's dangerous stuff. And if the referees aren't going to do anything about it, kind of like to see the Maple Leafs do something.
I mean, people are calling for Wayne Simmons. Go on Twitter this morning. I better see Simmons in the lineup on Sunday night. I don't know where I stand on that one. I haven't seen the guy play in a long time.
Can't Luke Shen handle that?
But yeah, you need somebody to step up in that moment. Like, that's your rookie. That's the guy that you've waited for a long time. I'm talking about Nyes in this moment to get in the lineup. There should have been some sort of...
Can't Sam Lafferty handle that?
Grab him and just give him a punch in the face. Like, it's not that hard.
Yeah. And again, you're trying not to put yourself in a... You're chasing a game, so you're trying not to put yourself
in
a position.
Yeah, and I don't want to speak out of both sides of my mouth, but that's your rookie kid that just got choke slammed to the ice.
And the Bunting thing was really bad. Like, yeah. And maybe you can make the argument that, hey, Austin Matthews got suspended for a cross-check.
I want to play that clip.
Against the Buffalo Sabres in last year's Heritage Classic, I believe it was called. Mm-hmm. I kind of see it, but like what a couple guys can do, and Tampa, we talked about it a lot, there are a couple guys that can just flirt with the line. Flirt and flirt and flirt with the line and never really go past it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Bennett went past it, even though his like intent to injure gauge
seemed
was firing yesterday.
Same time.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Matthews cross check. So Sheldon Keefe was asked post game about an update on Nyes and the thoughts on that Bunting cross check times two, because that's the other thing. He gets cross checked. He's down. He gets cross checked in the neck, first of all. Like that. The neck. It's not just like the back, the hip or the spine. Like the neck is a pretty sensitive area. And then he's laying there and Bennett gets him hard in the back one more time. So double cross check. So here's Keefe just discussing that and how he did see the parallels to Austin Matthews.
I don't have an update on his status. Obviously he didn't complete the game. So that's not positive. In terms of the hit, I'm not going to comment on that. The league will look at that. You know, I'm sure the cross-check on Bunting is eerily similar to the one that we saw with Austin last year in the outdoor game. We know how that one worked out. So, you know, we'll just see. The league will look at all these kind of things.
It's too bad because I think we went one game there where it was pretty well officiated and we didn't have this as a conversation. And, I mean, last night seemed it was on the edge of getting out of hand.
Shame on the officials if they were influenced at all by Paul Maurice, because it seemed like... It really, really, really did seem like they didn't want to continue calling minors against Florida.
Oh, yeah. Once
when the
two
Leafs
in a row,
were all over them.
It's like there's a script or a rule in their reffing contract that's like, you can't do three in a row.
Could have been six straight to start the game. And there was a couple, clearly, and they had their opportunities. They scored on one power play, but it felt like the Panthers could have went to the penalty box over and over and over and over and over again, and they started getting away with stuff. And that's where... Like, I'm not expecting anything from the NHL disciplinary committee. I'm really not. What if he gets fined? Whatever. It doesn't matter to the series whatsoever. It doesn't matter to Sam Bennett whatsoever. But I would love to see the officials actually recognize that Sam Bennett just concussed someone, probably behind the net, with something that was completely beyond what should be allowed in a hockey game, and then delivered a cross-check that you did call, but then another extra one that clearly had the same level of malice in it. Like, that should have been 2 minutes twice for Sam Bennett at the very least.
So four.
Or a 5 minute for that cross check. You know what I mean? Or two different calls, what I'm saying. Like, I just felt like the punishment wasn't worth didn't measure up to the crime.
Yeah.
Like, Sam Bennett deserved so much more than a single 2 minute minor penalty, assuming there's not one that I'm missing, in that game for what he did.
So, yeah, we'll get the updates on Nyes. Hope that there's just a nice extra day of recovery there, and he'll be in the lineup Sunday. You know, a factor to Maple Leafs last night, not the reason they lost the game.
I was shocked he came back in. I don't know if the camera caught him, but he looked like he was wobbling around trying to get back to the bench.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
He was out there right away again. I mean,
I don't
expect to see him Sunday, to be honest.
No, and I don't want to write the script, but I don't either. I mean, it's definitely a point of discussion on this breaking it down this morning. Not the reason Maple Leafs lost, but still, just officiate better.
It's okay to send the team that's earning power plays to the power play.
Yeah.
That's really, it's as simple
and
as that.
And I don't want it to be like, oh, apologists this morning. Maple Leafs fans said that they got shortchanged on penalties. That's certainly one that I think we can all agree on. We can move on. Defense. Justin Hall plays Sunday night.
Yeah. Does Mark Giordano? That's the bigger question.
This is now where we tiptoe into uncomfortable decisions for Sheldon Keefe. Two things can be true. Mark Giordano can be a veteran that brings a presence, that brings a steadiness, that is beloved by this team, who has had a pretty great regular season with all things considered. And it can also be true that he does not look like he belongs right now in the series, that he looks old and he's becoming costly to the Maple Leafs. Two things can be true. But where do you fall in this decision that you need to make right now with Mark Giordano? Like, it's getting to the point where, as Justin loves to say, it is untenable. You need to put fresh legs in. If that's Justin Hall, so be it. Timothy Liljegren also hasn't been super impressive. Is he out? I just think that the depth of the back end has been exposed. The Florida Panthers play a fast, aggressive style of hockey, and the slower guys are getting exposed. And that, for me, is Mark Giordano.
It could not be more obvious who the oldest player on the ice is.
Yeah.
Right? Especially from the vantage point above the rink where you're seeing like every movement, you're seeing him make turns, you're seeing really the difference in speed and ability in open ice. Mark Giordano is really struggling. And you can like fall back on the, oh, you don't want to embarrass him, or, oh, he plays on the left side. There are solutions for all of this. You have 8 defensemen that you can play and have played in playoff games so far. You can find a way. You can split up TJ Brody and Jake McCabe because, frankly, maybe they should be split up. You can do a lot of things. I would honestly rather see Erik Gustafsson at this point than Mark Giordano because he is the common denominator. The issues with Hall connected to Giordano. The issues with Liljegren, which I think aren't really all maybe a little touch overblown from what I've seen, at least in terms of commentary, are related to Mark Giordano. Mark Giordano is struggling mightily. And they know it. The opposition knows it. They know when he's out there that it's time to get it going. And he's out there enough that that's enough for the Florida Panthers. Like, that's not, yeah, that's not how they scored their goals. McCabe was on there, whatever. But when Mark Giordano's out there, that's the time to hunt if you're the Florida Panthers. And when you got Sergei Bobrovsky playing the way he is, and you are flummoxing the superstars the way they have, they can kind of wait and pick their spots, and they have been doing that. Mark Giordano's been under siege. He's a big part of the first goal. They've got to make the difficult decision. Like, it's not about, you know, respecting someone who did a favor for you.
But you know what? On the other side of that,
it's about winning a second round series, for God's sake.
He is a veteran. And if anyone's going to understand and take it well, it should be Mark Giordano. This isn't a rookie that is one. This isn't a factor to me. I don't think you should be trying to baby the guy. But I'm just saying it. Like, if I'm Sheldon Keefe, I'm not even thinking twice because whatever. He's played 100 years in this league, and I'm sure he gets it. It's different than like when it was like remember Sandin and Liljegren? There's like that tension between the two, like they're kind of in the same boat, and we were pitting them against each other. This guy's done it all. Like, he'll understand. If he's a real, true leader and veteran that we've been, you know, praising, I think he is. So
you would hope so.
Put him in the press box, and I don't think Mark Giordano's going to be pouty up there. He's a veteran guy. Like, he'll understand, I hope, right?
I also don't even think he has to be in the press box. You can just play 7 defensemen. There's so many different solutions.
He played 15 minutes last night.
He could play 12, and maybe he can give you a good 12.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe 15 is just a little too much. You just showed that you can work an 11-7 against a better team and win a big game and win not only against them, but yourselves in something that was so highly emotional and the stakes were beyond what they even seem like right now, which is, I think, a problem as well. But it's worked. 11-7 has worked. You've been able to make those decisions on the fly. Maybe Sheldon Keefe's best work has been when he's just making feel decisions in the moment. And he gets to do that in an 11-7 format. And honestly, when Matthew Nyes went out, maybe that was part of the key. Like, if there's any criticism on Keefe, and I don't think there's much yesterday, I thought Ryan O'Reilly kind of got lost in the shuffle a little bit when Matthew Nyes went out, and that's his line mate, and that kind of makes sense. And they were just throwing Nylander and Austin Matthews over the boards with 2 days off. And I think Matthews hit like 27 minutes. Like, there was a lot of reason to like overload. But I think that's part by design and part what Sheldon Keefe does well. He can sense when they are playing well, who's playing well, what combinations may work. And with seven defensemen, it'll be easier to just sit Mark Giroux down when needed and actually find something that works in the moment. I think seven defensemen should probably be the recourse for him with Matthew Nyes out, because frankly, I don't think putting Wayne Simmonds on a fourth line and playing him 4 minutes because there might be a chance to talk to Sam Bennett at some point is worth it. I think trying to deal with the huge underlying issue, the elephant in the room, the problems on the third pair, is how they have to use the silver lining, if you want to call it, for losing Matthew Nyes.
What about the way that, and I want to bring this up with some of our guests today, we were like tearing apart Justin Hall. And these two are in a similar boat. Is it just because Giordano is in?
I think we were connecting Giordano to it.
I just want to make sure that we're at the same level of frustration, because I certainly am. I want to make sure that that's known. It's not like we're picking on Justin Hall and giving Mark Giordano a free pass. But this, the temperature around these two has a different tone, that's all.
There's definitely a different, like, respect level. Mm-hmm. I think Giordano earned a lot over the course of a couple regular seasons here,
where
he played really well. Yeah. And Justin Hall's had these issues before. And Justin Hall's mistakes always seem to be underscored the same way William Nylander's seem to be underscored. You know what I mean? Like, it always, when there is a mistake, it just, like, is so painfully obvious and optically looks awful. And maybe hasn't looked as awful with Giordano as it did with Hall. But, like, I don't know how anyone can look at the body of work of both and be like, yeah, Justin Hall was definitely the problem. Like, the part of that pairing that was rotten. No, they were both bad. They were both struggling. They were both having trouble keeping up in that series. And now this is only extended into the second series for Mark Giordano, who, again, looks clearly like the oldest person on the ice and like he doesn't belong.
Okay. Well, what else you got here? You got something about Dubas that you brought up.
Well, I wanted to ask you because you're watching it.
When he was on the phone?
He was on the phone. He threw
the water bottle.
He was on the phone after. Oh, I think, I'm assuming it was a phone. I didn't actually see the phone.
I don't know but what else he'd be doing.
When did he throw the water bottle?
After a goal against, or
was it? Because he was on the phone
Danielle
after 3-2.
About to tell me, I can see it.
He was on the phone after 3-2. I was just wondering when all that happened.
He was on
the
phone.
Late game. I was listening to Gunnar and Stelic on the way home, and they were sitting in the booth beside Dubas and that group. And there's a nice TV and couches in there. It's a nice little spot.
He was on the phone after Samsonov got hit in the head, Danielle, he says.
Oh, was he?
Oh, that's when he threw the water bottle.
That's when he threw the water bottle. Yeah, because I remember seeing the phone thing. I thought right after 3-2.
Who's he calling?
So that's interesting that he threw the water bottle after he got hit in the head.
Just probably frustrated that, like, I mean, you're putting a lot of pressure on Ilya Samsonov to be the guy, and he's looked like he's been laboring at times, right? Like, I don't think he's 100% health.
But he does that all the time.
But that's it. He does that all the time. He is a guy that I don't think I ever feel like he's fully healthy. Like, he's a slip and slide down there, and he can be somewhat dramatic. And maybe that's, Dubas was frustrated that, oh God, the last thing we need is this, right? I don't think I think they were asked about Samsonov post-game, and it's just that he was fine.
I would have been throwing the water bottle after the Nylander.
And maybe he did. Maybe it was
turnover.
Sportsnet cameras missed it.
The Matthews
tough
turnover.
Day to be a water bottle.
Yeah. So an animated group.
Oh, it's so funny you say this, because, like, right now we have screens in the studio. Right now we have screens in the studio, and they just played the highlight of Dubas chucking the water bottle. So, I mean,
It was a water bottle chucking worthy night. Like, let's be honest, that's exactly the emotion that I'd expect him to feel, because it was an immensely, immensely, immensely frustrating night.
Why can't the Maple Leafs win at home in the playoffs?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's, like, a great conclusion to draw, to be honest.
No, there's not, like, oh, they were out at Marble on King Street.
And I don't want to. I actually thought I was a little critical of the fans in game one. I thought it was, like, way too quiet for what the stakes were. Like, we're in round two. So we've been waiting so long. Like, are you out of gas? Like, it was kind of like a quiet feel. It didn't feel like round two. It didn't feel like round one. It felt different. The crowd was really trying last night to get them going, because there was long stretches, second period, where they were awful. And they needed something in the third period, because they couldn't quite get going right off the bat, partly due because of they were killing a penalty. But the Leafs crowd, I thought, was great in that game and really, really trying. We haven't talked about John Tavares much because he's the other guy who looks old. But he also looked unbelievable in the third period. But I want to talk about, like, he's not immune or he's not above the criticism in this game.
No.
Because
who said that?
You know what the Leafs needed from last night? It's two more minutes at the end of the game. Do you think they would have scored with two more minutes?
Would just start on time. I mean, they started the first period on time, but why can't you start the other periods on time?
There's 22 minutes in the third period. Do you think they tie it?
Yeah, sure. It's fantasy world.
Maybe not. But they only had 18 minutes to tie the game because John Tavares took one of the most... He didn't take the penalty. He had one of the most egregious plays of the entire night.
That's the second time you said egregious this morning.
It's an egregious night.
Yeah, it's good. This egregious counter. Too.
He refused to take a hit in the final seconds of the second period.
That was soft.
And Florida had a scoring chance that resulted in a penalty for Austin Matthews. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, and that if I'm Sheldon Keefe, the two guys that were wearing it in the second intermission, probably William Nylander and John Tavares, and guess what? They look like the two best players in the third period. But John Tavares' refusal to take a hit results in a penalty that gives you two fewer minutes to try and tie the game in the third period in what is kind of a must-win scenario. Like, they're not out of it, but that was pretty clear that they needed to tie the game last night. So anyone who's played any level of hockey understood what John Tavares had to do there. Mm-hmm. You just kind of nestle into the boards. You kill the puck.
Yep.
And he didn't want to take a hit from Nick Cousins. And good old Nick Cousins, who does not belong on a top line in the NHL, who's suddenly thriving on a top line in the NHL, got to like fist pump and have his little moment because he knew he was in John Tavares' head when he had the footsteps or applied the footsteps behind him. It was an embarrassing moment for Tavares, and I'm not surprised that he came out like a different person in the third period because that's not how your captain has to be playing games in the playoffs. Yep. Like, you cannot make those mistakes. As bad as the mistakes that directly led to goals were, that one was just as bad, cost them 2 minutes in the third period, and looked terrible. And guess what? The Florida Panthers know that they can kind of get in the head of John Tavares. Every time they get a chance to talk to him, they're doing it. Mm. Brandon Montour is constantly in his ear. He was in his ear as a warm-up, and at the end of the first period, he was doing it.
Maybe they're congratulating him on his daughter's birth.
Maybe they are. I'm sure they were congratulating him on his daughter's birth at the end of the second period when he decided he didn't want to go to the wall and made sure that the Maple Leafs started the third period shorthanded. It was bad.
Yeah, you know what? We've talked about at least one singular mistake from the core four, every single one of them now. That one from John Tavares, the Willie blunder with the goal, the Matthews Marner blunders with the goal, and John Tavares in that situation. That is just not acceptable from your core four. Sentence ends there.
There were moments in that game that would suggest that nothing is different with this team.
Mm. This is where, and I'd hate bringing it up again, where your superstars grab this game and flip the script, and they tried in the third period. I understand that. But why is Leon Draisaitl able to score four goals? Joe Pavelski, four goals. Like, these guys, they're finding a way. I know maybe Sergei Bobrovsky isn't playing against them, but nonetheless, just there's got to be a level of intensity that is consistent for 60 minutes because you take your foot off the gas, and this Florida Panthers team deserves a lot of respect because they're not letting go. They're not letting off. They're the cup favorites this morning. They are a damn good team. And if
and
you're
taking their chances.
And if you underestimated them in game one, it's game two. Like, you need to have learned about this team and be able to deliver on home ice. Now you're going down to Florida 0-2. Like, it is not a point of comfort right now. And they've been able to come back in games, but you look at historically, when you're down 0-2 in the playoffs, I don't want to tell you the numbers, they're not good.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in a mountain climb. It just takes one game. You win Sunday night, right back in this, right? Like, it's
right back in it.
It's not, hey, who just did that? The Florida Panthers, right? It's not out of the question to be able to come back in a series, but you need to be able to leave it all out there. Like, you'll be well rested Sunday. You get an extra day. Hey, maybe that's something you look at as a favorable opportunity for your team. Maybe it gives Florida Panthers a day of, maybe they lose focus for a day. I don't know. You need to find a way to make that your advantage.
Yeah, it really did seem like, and it's going to be a big apologist day for some fans, and it's going to be real heat and anger from other fans. It's going to be it's a divisive sort of night, the way that they played, 100%. But for every, like, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 plays that were positive that the Leafs core were able to make individually, they all made crucial, crucial mistakes that were weighted more heavily than the 4, 5, 6, 7 positive plays and the ratio that they were able to create in that
game.
Some
of that's bad luck, too.
Some of it's
you're not
going
to have a game with zero mistakes. Zero mistakes is impossible.
It's where you make those mistakes,
and it's exactly that. The timing and the location of the mistakes, it just seemed like they were, like, serving them up on a platter. Here's here's a mistake that isn't, oh, you know, I flipped the puck out and, you know, we iced it.
Starts of periods.
This is...
close periods.
The worst time for a mistake.
Yeah, and they kept making them. And again, it feels like those are Leaf mistakes and Leaf blunders and Leaf narratives of the past. And after exercising demons, after playing the way Tampa... out Tampa-ing Tampa, in some ways, by playing that, like, okay, low event, mistake-free, patience, all that stuff you needed to actually get over the hump, you've abandoned, and you start making plays through the middle of the ice in your own zone and icing the puck 7 seconds in and giving away pucks at blue lines, refusing to take hits, not going into corners, things that they thought, we thought, they rid themselves of, and things that we could pinpoint as differences between themselves and other teams in playoffs in years previous, they've returned here against the Florida Panthers. The answer is why? The answer, if you ask Sheldon Keefe beyond why, is I don't know. His response to what happened was it was baffling, the mistakes that were made out there, that he didn't have answers for them. And I get it. I don't know how you have answers for that, because why this team and those players made some of the errors that they did, like, there's really no justification for it. It's like you forgot that you're round two, game two, must-win situation. I don't understand it. I don't know how you can go from that discipline versus Tampa to, hey, it's mid-December, Florida. We're better than them. Let's just go get it.
We'll take your calls at 7:30. Maybe a little therapy session this morning. Maybe not the feel-good Friday we had in mind. Maybe a freak-out Friday. Maybe you're an apologist, and that's all right. We'll take it. We'll take your calls. We'll hear you out. That'll be at 7:30. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your Rogers cell phone. Leafs down 0-2, heading down to Florida. Maybe there are points of confidence that you gain from this. Still have waited quite a long time for a round two win.
Mm.
You made it to round two. We still wait for a round two win.
Clock's ticking on that.
We take your text as well at 590-590. We have some different feels this morning in the text line. There will be some different
You got a
takes.
Little sampling there? Give us a sampling.
Yeah. Jesse from Woodbridge. Good morning, guys. Did you know that the Leafs and the LA Kings have the same number of home wins in the second round? Actually, the same number of total wins in the second round. The Kings didn't make it to the second round. Jesse in Woodbridge. Rick and Markham brings up a good point. How do you think being in Miami during the F1 weekend is going to affect these players? This is going to be a busy weekend down in Florida. You get a day off, you better be sitting there in front of the video board. Probably today.
Do you? I don't know. Like, I don't think there's like a mistrust, like they're going to be partying at the F1.
No, I'm just saying.
But like...
this is a lot of distractions
down
there.
The Oilers had the extra day.
How'd that work in Santa Monica on the beach?
It didn't work out very well.
Here's Wes on the 400. I ranted myself to sleep. These guys got outplayed. No heart, privileged, spoiled to core four. Third period, Nylander showed up better the rest of the series. They get punched, hacked, throw their hands up and smile and take the high road and think they're the better people for it. No one is coming to save you. No matter what your mom and dad are telling you after the game, it's not okay.
I'll give them credit for playing through the garbage. Because they did. Like, Michael Bunting's best behavior. Michael Bunting is surprising me with how well he's dealing with.
He could have easily done a couple chaotic things
like
last night.
He had guys just grabbing at his neck. Like, we saw chokeholds. Like, Aaron Ekblad's just grabbing heads and scrums. Like, it's very... they're definitely towing the line, but they're towing the line effectively. Like, I'll give Bunting credit. That's the point, is that he didn't overreact, and he was able to draw a penalty. Although he definitely paid the price for it.
All right. Lots of texts here. 590, 590. We'll take those. We'll take your calls at 7:30. Cannot wait to hear We've been having some great conversations with our listeners throughout the first round and the second round. Let's keep that going today. Happy Cinco de Mayo and big happy birthday shout out to Laura Stacey, fan of the show.
Oh.
Bestie.
I was wondering that, who that was for.
It's a big birthday.
Okay.
May 5th.
Happy birthday, Laura.
A-list content on the other side of the break.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, we often joke about sending people to Moon Jail. Moon Jail. It's a J.D. Bunkus special. How about to Mars? A new reality TV show. Now, just hold on for this. It's a bit of a wild story.
Okay.
A new reality TV show is about to debut in the next month or two called Stars on Mars. What it is an unscripted competition series where celebrities will be fighting to conquer Mars, where they will spend time in simulated space station with conditions similar to life on the red planet. The group will compete in missions each episode and vote to send one of their crewmates home each week. It's basically like a celebrity survivor in space. Some of the names: Marshawn Lynch, Lance Armstrong, Ronda Rousey, Richard Sherman, Adam Rippon, who's an Olympic figure skater. The list is lengthy. Some even like celebrity, like Ariel Winter from Modern Family.
Yeah.
It's premieres
from
June
5th. Modern Family to Stars on Mars.
William Shatner, Mission Control. Like, he's going to be the guy,
he's the
I believe.
Host.
Like, as he's Mission Control. What the hell are we doing here? Stars on Mars, baby. Let's get going.
How do we simulate conditions on Mars?
That's
if
what's
we've
freaking
not,
me.
Like, really.
We're just guessing.
Been there? Have we been
say,
to Mars? I don't know.
Something's landed on Mars.
Things.
Not humans.
To Mars.
No people.
So, how do we know then? We're just sending robots out there. They get the data. That's why we're going to space, so we can simulate reality TV shows.
So I just Googled what are the
second
conditions.
Second careers for celebrities.
What are the conditions on Mars?
It's got to be hot. No?
NASA says the following, and we know NASA probably knows best. The average temperature on Mars is minus 80 degrees Fahrenheit.
Never mind.
Very
so
way
Marshawn's
below
gonna,
freezing.
Marshawn's going to be cold then.
Way below freezing. Its surface is rocky with canyons, volcanoes, dry lake beds, and craters all over it. Red dust covers most of its surface. Mars has clouds and wind just like Earth.
So Marshawn Lynch is going to be in a hole that is freezing cold. Like, how, if you're simulating the conditions, how is it not going to be so uncomfortable that you just cannot, like, survive?
Well, they're obviously not going to make it 80 degrees.
Then what's the point?
Well, Justin, people will die. 80 below Fahrenheit?
You said the crux of the show was simulating conditions on Mars.
It's probably going to be minus 10. They'll be wearing Canada Goose jackets. They'll be all bundled up, and they'll be running around
like,
in
that's
volcanoes.
The adversity? Like, I understand, like, Survivor, you know, there's competitions, there's food issues that they're dealing with.
Yeah,
they're trying to survive encampments. This is just like, hey, it's a little cold. Here's a Big Brother style.
That's exactly it.
Okay. That's probably not going to do it for me.
Well, I think the whole thing will be, what are these people going to, how are they going to act when they're all competing?
When they're cold.
And, yeah.
How are they going to act when they're cold?
This is basically what it's like when you're waiting for a King Street car that doesn't come in the middle of winter and you're all huddled up trying to get on the one bus that comes by. This is Stars on Mars.
How do you approach that? Do you?
I walk. I can't do it. I cannot be huddled trying to jam myself in a bus across King Street. I don't mind a walk. Like, if you're just well prepared, like, you can handle the cold. These guys will be fine. They'll be bundled. It's TV.
Yeah.
Ronda Rousey, though, and Marshawn Lynch, they'll be the leaders of the packs, right? Like, you'll see she'll be getting, like, I don't really watch Big Brother or Survivor or any of that stuff, but you know leaders immediately. Like, they
Maybe
have
Marshawn will be a leader.
Oh yeah,
I feel like Lynch. Lance Armstrong will be insufferable.
No. Oh, I thought you were gonna say like
he'll
good.
I think he'll be a leader. No.
Yeah, but people are gonna be like, yeah, were you cheating over there or what? What'd you bring on Mars with you? There's some interesting names. So June something 5th, I think we'll be tuning in. Maybe we can have a daily segment of trying to guess who's gonna make it through Mars on Stars on Mars or Mars Stars.
You can add that to my list of tough moments, assuming Mars was hot.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't want to, to be honest, it's red. I think that's why you thought it was hot.
Is there sand in the beachy?
It's just like they're going to send them to Cabo, actually. It's like Bachelor in Paradise, but they're going to pretend it's Mars. All right.
Sounds like a great show. We're running out of ideas.
Yeah, we're trying to make things up here for TV. Okay. Anthony Petrelli is going to join us on the other side of the break, a writer for Maple Leafs Hot Stove and Yahoo Sports Canada. We'll have your calls at 7:30. So you can get in the queue early at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or *590 on your Rogers cell phone. We want to work through it with you. A little therapy this morning. We're giving away Aerosmith tickets later in the show. Jason Bukla will join us, and he knows the Florida Panthers well. He was former director of scouting with the Panthers and obviously a current sports and analyst. We've chatted with him quite a lot this year. And then Liam McHugh hosted the NHL and TNT panel. He'll give us a breakdown. He's sitting beside Paul Bissonnette, who is a Maple Leaf super fan. I want to know how that roller coaster ride is going. And then, of course, we'll do a wake and rake to wrap up the show. All that next on the Fan Morning Show.